Tilehurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Hello, welcome along to the first in a two-part interview with former Reading midfielder Jem Karachan. My name's Dan Wimbush, editor of the TilehurstEnd.com, and thank you very, very much for hitting that download button as well. As I record this, it is Christmas Eve, December the 24th, 2016. So wherever you are, I hope you're having a lovely day so far, whether you're heading into town to brave the shops, whether you're all done and resting up with the family, or if you unfortunately have to be at work, I hope the shift goes quickly for you and get back and settle in for Christmas. Wherever you are, thank you very much indeed for joining us, and I hope you have a lovely Christmas period. As mentioned, this is the first of two parts of an interview we recorded with Jem around about 3 weeks ago. So I think it was just after Reading had got beat 5-0 at Fulham. So there was a couple of references to that in there. But this first part today covers Jem's early career. So how he ended up at Reading, his early trials and tribulations, how he nearly left Reading at one stage. And it goes all the way through to that fantastic title-winning triumph in 2011-12. And then part two, which will be released in around about a week's time, covers the sort of second half, I suppose, of his Reading career and the disappointments and setbacks he had with various injuries, how he ended up at Galatasaray and what might be next in the future for Jem. So thank you very, very much indeed to Jem for giving us his time to talk to us. Hopefully you'll agree, I thought it was a fantastically open and frank set of answers from Jem. He didn't hold anything back, and I said massive amounts of our thanks go to Jem, and big thanks again to all of you out there who helped support the podcast throughout 2016. It's very heartwarming that you're still downloading, listening, sending in your feedback to all the various forms on Twitter, Facebook and in email and all that jazz. So thank you very much indeed, and a bigger and final thank you before we get into the interview to those of you who have joined the Patreon campaign at patreon.com/thetilehurstend. That's patreon.com/thetilehurstend. It's our crowdfunding scheme and it's helping us keep going. It's giving us little boosts here and there to buy new microphones and bits and pieces, subscribe to different websites, and also just giving us just a general morale boost when you see a couple of quid hit the coffers. It is all very, very much appreciated. So without further ado, here is the first part of that two-part interview with Jem Karachan.
The Tilehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetilehurstend.com.
So delighted to be joined by former Reading midfielder Jem Karachan. Jem, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us on the Tilehurst End Podcast. First of all, how are you?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure to have you on the show. How are things career-wise? Obviously, you left Reading in the summer of 2015, joined Galatasaray, signing that three-year deal. How are things in Turkey for you at the moment? How are things going at the club? And what's sort of your short-term prospects at the moment?
Yeah, like you said, obviously I joined coming up to 18 months ago, which was, you know, an extremely tough decision. You know, I love Reading to bits, and you know, after being there so long, and you know, being captain, it was the hardest decision I've made, and probably will ever had to make. But at the time, I'd obviously only played a few games after coming off that horrific and never-ending injury, so there's still quite a little bit of doubt in my own mind. And when I got offered the three-year deal, it was I guess probably looking a bit more into, you know, security for my own future and my family's. Just trying to think of, you never know what could happen in football. Yeah. And at the time, look, Reading were absolutely brilliant with me, and you know, I never have a bad word to say, and I can completely understand where they were coming from in terms that I hadn't played a lot of football, but there wasn't, you know, a long contract on offer. And I think most people in that situation would have probably looked at, you know, the security of a longer term deal, and at a club that I kind of always dreamed of playing for. You know, my dad supported Galatasaray, which was, well, the whole family did. And, you know, I'd watched them a lot growing up and been to the stadium here on visits with my dad. And it was kind of like, you know, after such a long injury out, it was like, where's this come from kind of things. I'm sure a few people were like, you know, it was just one of them things that were just too good to turn down. And, you know, it was difficult. And I still sit here now sometimes thinking, you know, what happened if I stayed? And, you know, it's one of them things I guess will stick with me and I'll have to live with. But that's how it is. And at the moment, you know, I signed, and it was the manager, you know, brought me in, and I'd played a couple of games, done well. And, you know, I had a good chat with him about, you know, starting to, you know, settle in a bit more and get playing. And then he got sacked, which was
not ideal.
Exactly, yeah. And I, you know, they had a lot of faith in me coming over and, you know, proving that, you know, I could go there and do well. And I also had a lot of faith in the manager that brought me in, who I'd known since I was, you know, under 17s. And he came to watch Reading Everton in the Youth Cup when we were like 17. Wow. He was the original Turkey scout that scouted me for the youth team. So he kind of always followed my career. And, you know, that meant a lot for me, you know, just to show that someone who'd followed me throughout my career was then, you know, willing to, you know, show that faith and bring me to, you know, now one of the biggest clubs in Europe. So for him to get sacked was kind of a tough blow to take. And the new manager came in and didn't, you know, obviously wasn't his cup of tea. And I managed to play, you know, that Champions League game, which was obviously another dream come true. And then I went out on loan to Bursaspor, where the manager that had got sacked had gone to.
Yeah.
So again, with some faith. And, you know, it was, I'd gone there, you know, played a few games, done well, and I enjoyed my time there, but came back to Galatasaray in the summer. And, you know, it's been tough. I've not been involved, and, you know, we'll see what happens coming up to January. But all in all, it's been a hell of an experience for myself and for my family. And, it's one you have to take the positives from.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, as you say, it's a dream come true sort of move. I think I remember we were sort of writing articles and things at the time on the Tarlest End. I don't think there's a single Reading fan out there that, faced with your decision, wouldn't have taken it. You know, a 3-year deal, chance of Champions League football, playing in a top division, one of the biggest clubs in Europe. I think it was a no-brainer, really. But let's go back to the start of the time. And how did you end up in Reading to begin with? Because I'm right in saying you're an East London boy. I've now upset a lot of the audience, so I apologise. Yeah. Around the sort of Millwall area. How did you end up in Reading's academy from there?
Well, I was at Wimbledon from when I was about 6 or 7 till 14, when they made the move to Milton Keynes. And it was just, I couldn't ask that of my mum, really, driving up to Milton Keynes and back. And, you know, she's done absolutely everything for me. And she was like, it's whatever you want to do. But, you know, I think it was a bit much, and it would have ended up me moving there, and it wasn't right. And that's where, obviously, I used to watch Joby and Ledge, and, you know, I used to look up to them as kids. So that the chance to play with them, funny enough, when it came to Reading, I still idolised him when they came at Reading, really. So it was quite funny that
end up being your captain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then after that, I was I was on trial at Man United somehow, we played Reading in a game, and Steve Shorey and Nicky Hammond come up to me after and basically offered me a scholarship, and I took it. You know, it was the best decision I've ever made, really. So that's how I ended up there. Yeah.
Who was in charge of the academy when you first joined? Was that when Brendan was still there? Or was it Nick Hammond, or was it when Eamon had taken over?
Literally as Eamon had come in. Well, actually, before I actually agreed to sign, I actually came on trial with Reading before I went on trial to United, and I had an absolute torrid in the trial game.
Oh, no.
Against West Ham, where I think it was like, I think Jack Collison or who else was it in there? A game, the absolute runaround, and I remember Naz Bashir after the game was like, oh, we'll get back to you.
Don't call us, we'll call you.
Yeah, which was gutting. And I remember pestering mum going, what have they said?
No.
And it was like, nothing yet, Jem. So that kind of went. And then when I played for United at centre-back, and I had a decent game, and they offered it to me after. And yeah, it was as Eamon come in. So he, as I walked through the door, it was Eamon that first greeted me. So, you know, just even speaking about him is, you know, it's tough.
Yeah, it's just a really, tough year. The stand, you know, I sit in the stand every day, and you get to see his name proudly on what was the North Stand, and you see his face outside. Such a massive influence on the academy. I mean, you only had to see the tributes that poured in after he passed away to know how much he meant. I mean, how was he with you? What was your sort of relationship like with him?
You'll get me choked up soon. He was a father figure, really. He was, we had so many, you know, just there was so much going on when you're a kid. You're moving home, you know, you miss your family, and Eamon was just brilliant. He was that father figure that you could speak to, and you would never want to get on his wrong side. And, you know, he'd always have a laugh with you and he'd show you the right way. But, you know, there was always that thing where it was like your dad, you never want to get told off by him. And when you did, you felt it was the end of the world. And, you know, you're always thinking, aiming. And he knew absolutely everything, what you were doing at home, when you went back to your mum's, what you're doing. He had spies everywhere. And it would always crack me up. Even when I moved to Turkey, he was always sending me stuff. And, you know, he was, you know, the most influential person in my career, and he always will be. And I've still got the texts, you know, that he used to send me on my phone just to keep, just to go over them every now and again. And, you know, he'll be massively missed. And I saw him just before he sadly passed, and it was tough, but it was just nice to see him again after not seeing him since I'd moved to Istanbul. And, you know, just, you know, we had a couple of chats about old memories and stuff, and it was tough, but it was something that I'll always look back on with good memories.
The fantastic thing about the work he's done is how, like you say, how many people he touched, how many people he had an influence on. And thankfully, you know, his legacy will live on for generations of Reading players. You know, you talk about people, you know, you yourself being inspired by him, someone's then inspired by, say, yourself or another academy graduate, and that goes on. And the fantastic work the academy's doing. I mean, you came through what is increasingly looking like a golden generation. I mean, you look at the players now that came through in that sort of 4 or 5 year spell. You've got yourself, you've got Alex McCarthy, you've got Ben Hamer, Alex Pearce, Simon Church, Hal Robson-Kanu, James Henry, and others that I'm probably missing out, even players that didn't maybe quite make it, people like your Scott Davises out there.
Yeah.
What made that group special? Was that just a lightning in a bottle, or was it something you guys were doing?
I remember the first day we were there, and obviously we'd all kind of played together from what were we under 15s, and we'd done really well that year, and we all were like we were playing your Arsenals and your everyone, and we were giving them a good going over, and it was funny because we kind of knew that we were, you know, a good bunch of lads, but you never kind of think past your age group. And our first day at Hogwood, Eamon sat us up on the little bank at Hogwood, all like the new group. So it was like me, James Henry, Piercy, Gilfy, Churchy, you had Tom Petrowski, who unfortunately he would have probably been one of the best strikers Reading had seen, I reckon. But he had a horrific injury, and he kind of gets missed off that group. But he was, it's a shame he never made it because he was brilliant. And he sat us down and he pointed over to the second year scholars, your Scott Davies and your Liam Irams and people like that. And he kind of just, he made it a challenge. He made it a war between the first years and the second years. And I'll always remember that. And he made every day a battle. He made everything you did like a game. And it was like, you have to win that game. If you want to make it as a footballer, you have to beat them in front of you over there because they're the ones in your way at the moment. And it kind of just, everything we did, the running, he used to run us into the ground, but just used to make sure that we knew that we'd had to beat that group ahead of us. And it was, it just installed something in us, I guess, that we never wanted to lose. We'd never want to give someone that extra yard, that little boost for someone else, so that you're hurt. We'd do bleep tests and he'd say, if you don't get level 15, you won't make it. And we'd just be dying. Like, we'd just be giving everything we had because we knew what he said was gold. And he was, like I said, that father figure. So everything he spoke, we listened to every last word and we kind of just soaked it all up and we just pushed everyone else on. We were probably the busiest group of kids you'd ever know. I look back at some of the stuff I did and Piercy always brings me out of it. And I was like, wow, did I really used to do it? He just installed that kind of, that
sort of drive.
Just so many words you could say. But, yeah, we just wanted to make it so much. And we had a really good, like, group of bunch. We all loved each other. And, you know, we all stay in touch now. And it was amazing to kind of come through as a group as we did because it doesn't happen anymore. And, well, apart from Reading, because it still is happening at Reading. It doesn't happen anywhere else, and I don't think Reading really does get the attention or the credit it does deserve for that. So, no, it was amazing coming through that bunch of lads, and you know, seeing Guilfi play in the Premier League and do so well now, and just the stuff he's been doing since he was 15. And
I was going to say, did you know he was that special from that early on? At what point did you go, this guy's good?
We had a game against Milton Keynes Dons. I remember when we were 15, and they came in the change room. It was two lads, Guilfi and his mate, and we were all like, oh, who's this trialist now? And straight away we were like, we can't let the trialist be better than us. Let's put the trialist off. As all lads do, as the trialist comes in, it's kind of they're like the new one.
Sure, yard, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, like they're trying to take your place kind of thing. You're looking out for your mates. And he got the ball 25 yards out. He came on a sub and he put one in the top corner. And we kind of looked at each other. We were like, oh, no. We've got one on our hands here. And that was the start of it. From that moment, I think we all knew. And then, fortunately enough, Reading got him signed and sealed. And we'd see it day in, day out, how good he is. And, yeah, I'll always say I'm the one that helped him make it, because I always used to do his running in the academy. But he's an unbelievable player. And obviously, he's been a shining light for Swansea this year. But straight away, he showed us how good he was.
Yourself and Guilfi and lots of others, the one thing that sort of bound you together almost was that you all were out on loan quite often. I mean, yourself, you were at Bournemouth and at Millwall. I mean, how important do you think those loan spells were for you? Because there's a lot of debate now whether players should stay in the academy system or go out and get football. I mean, what do you think personally? Did you benefit from going out on those spells?
Yeah, I think anyone that you'd ask in football who's probably been on loan will say going on loan is huge. It puts you into that kind of man's world where you're going from, not that we were baby by any means, because we were anything, but you see it now. I think there's like cleaning boots and all them jobs. We had it easy even then when you listen to people talk about, you know, painting the terraces and stuff. So you have to get out and play them games, you know, lose away to Tranmere on a wet and windy day and get abused for it by the gaffer. And it shows you what it really is like and how much you do want to kind of be in that world. And we all went on loan. I remember Piercy and James going on loan really young. I think it was to Norwich and Nottingham Forest. And all the other boys that are in that group who didn't manage to get loans were gutted, because we thought, oh, like, obviously, if you're going on loan, like, you're kind of like the ones that they want sooner and things like that. So, you know, fortunately enough, we all got good loan moves and we all benefited really well. I think Guilfi went to Crewe.
Yeah, he did.
I remember, I think it was the third or fourth game in, the Crewe manager said, this guy is special and the best player in this league. And I think he was only like 18. So yeah, it was pretty early on that people started to realise kind of Guilfi was very good, and Piercy went out and done great, and Steve Coppell then obviously gave everyone a chance, which was, I think, massive and probably forgotten about, that it was Steve that kind of actually threw us in there at the deep end and put us, you know, out there to try and earn our living.
Yeah, what was it like playing for Millwall? Obviously, you grew up it's roughly around the area. What was it like playing in front of that sort of crowd and at that football club?
Yeah, obviously when you're growing up, you hear all the stories of Millwall, and my uncle was a massive Millwall fan. So when after my loan at Bournemouth, Gibbo rang me up and said that Kenny Jackett wanted to take me there on loan. And I loved it, because I was obviously moving back home as well. So it was perfect for me. But I remember my first game and I got absolutely abused by a Millwall fan. Won't go into too much details, but I think it was about me being Turkish.
Oh, dear.
And I was like, hold on a minute, mate, I've got a Millwall shirt on here. But it was kind of, I laughed at it as well at the same time, because I was like, wow, football's crazy. But it was amazing, that little spell I had. I think we played 7 games. We only lost one and we kind of steered away from relegation. So it was a massive learning curve growing up. And it was something that made me, really, like when you look back at them loan spells, I think anyone that, you know, is looking to go on loan, I think it's massive when you're a kid, you know, this. Don't get me wrong, the standard's probably improved with the under-23 league and stuff, but you're getting players that are kind of like 21, 22 and haven't really got near to the first team now, that, you know, if they don't make that, people, other managers do look into how many games you've played and what standard you've played at. And, you know, it's massive now, I reckon, for young lads. So any advice I ever gave or did was to all young lads, or get out on loan, get yourselves out on loan if you can, no matter what level it is. And, you know, go out and prove it. I think Liam Kelly's shown that. He was
I think, yeah.
And I think that shows whatever level you go out to, you do well enough. And Liam's a great little player. And you know, he's shown that and he's earned his chance this year and he's doing great. And it's brilliant to see that. So like Liam now, he's a, you know, someone to look at for all the other young lads that are his age at Reading and other clubs to, you know, go, wow, just getting out alone and showing that you can do well is huge.
Absolutely. Well, you came back to the club, and as you mentioned, Steve Coppell brought you into the team. It was just after we'd been relegated back to the Championship. And I remember you were in the team quite a lot in the early part of the season. The team was flying and we were looking really well set to go, you know, straight back up. And then something just stopped. I mean, we couldn't win a game at home. We were struggling. Yeah. You were in the dressing room at the time. What happened to that team to suddenly go from being non-stop putting fives and sixes past the likes of Sheffield Wednesday to not being able to beat Barnsley?
Well, he took me out of the team. That was
absolutely.
it was. I remember the first couple of games. You know, I wanted to be playing and I didn't get the nod. And then I think it was Crystal Palace at home was my first game. We won 4-2 and I set up a goal and I was like, wow, like what a feeling! Like my first game at Reading, it, you know, the best feeling ever. It was unbelievable. And like you said, we were on a wicked run and then, you know, I'm trying to think, but I think we just stopped taking our chances, and then that seed of doubt kind of came in, and I think we just changed a couple of ways we were doing things. We always had this, you know, the little like looking at five games and how many points we'd need or what we'd target. Say it's out of 15 points, we're like, right, we've got these fixtures coming, we'll win there, we'll draw. You set a little points tally, and I think we kind of stopped doing that when it got a bit rough, and then we just couldn't score, and you know it was very poor. Yeah, we threw it away, and then it was the Burnley playoff, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
And yeah, I think was it Beaky's, not Beaky.
I was going to ask you what did Steve say to, if you can tell us, what did Steve say to Beaky in the dressing room after that red card?
I'd say it was I don't even think it was Steve. I think it was your Wallies and your Kevin Dillons that went absolutely nuts at him. But all the other lads were a bit, we were just shocked, I think. We were all a bit baffled by it and what kind of went down, because it's the last thing you think about, I guess. Well, I've only been sent off one, but I never thought about taking my shirt off or going mental at anyone. But no, it wasn't a good feeling. And I think just taking that first game into the second leg, where I remember Churchy made his debut so we were all buzzing for him for that, but it was just gutting to kind of seeing it thrown away, especially when you looked at that strike force as well. Like if you had that now, you'd shoot straight back up, wouldn't you? Like it was just sad, really, that we couldn't, and it was the end of that era, I guess, as well. I think a lot of people left after us not going straight back up, and it was like the start of a new begin. Well, that team, obviously, sadly, players departed, and then the start of a new beginning as well with us lot coming through.
Was there anyone in that sort of team, because you came up around that golden sort of 2005-06 era, and this is, was there anybody in that squad that you particularly took you under their wing, or you particularly looked up to?
Yeah, well, when you've got, you know, Sidwell and Harps, you know, you'd look at them and they would make sure we watched them and saw what they were doing. And from Harps, it was just that he ran all day. Like, the guy was a fitness guru. He'd run around in training, before training, doing laps with like weights around his ankles. And I was like, wow, like, this guy's nuts. Like, and then you could see how, you know, in the game, how, you know, you'd always see the last 15, 20 minutes, how he'd kind of come into his own and, you know, feed off seeing players tired. And that was like amazing to kind of see how he used his training to go in. And he was always the first in at training, Harps. He had Breakfast Club with Nigel Gibbs that me and Piercy were part of, and we'd do passing off the bounce boards and loads of little technical drills to try and improve. And, you know, I loved Harps, I still love Harps. And when I bought my first house in Reading in Shinfield, I lived on the same road as him. So it was like, he was like my idol probably at Reading. To move in, obviously, to on the same street as him, he's like, wow, I'm really making it here. So it was, you know, he was probably the top one, but obviously Siddy was an unbelievable player as well, who went on to great things.
Oh, and the fact he's still going, that goal he scored the other week, not bad.
Yeah, unbelievable, wasn't it? The left foot shank. He's a quality player, to be fair. And, you know, Harps is obviously, I think he's down with Bobby at Hungerford at the moment as well. So it's, I always stay in touch with Bobby to see how they're going. But yeah, Siddy's a, is brilliant. And I think Brighton are second now, and he's playing week in, week out. I think he's keeping Ollie at the team. So it just speaks volumes of, you know, what a professional he is and what a player.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned lots of players moved on after that playoff failure, and Steve himself obviously left. In came Brendan Rodgers. It's one of those sort of really quite controversial eras in Reading. It was only 6 months, but it's one that you talk, get a group of Reading fans in the pub together now, you'll still get five different opinions on it. Yeah. You lived through it. What was Brendan like to work with, and why do you think it went wrong for him?
Yeah, I guess it's quite funny at the moment, obviously, with Yap Stam coming in and Reading are playing that total football at the moment, aren't they? And obviously doing brilliant with it. So I guess you can kind of try and compare them a little bit. But, you know, he came in and he changed a lot of things. And Brendan, he'd obviously come from Chelsea and he had that kind of Mourinho-esque thing. But his training was unbelievable. The boys absolutely loved it. And we were like going into that start of the season. It was the home game at Forest. And we were like thinking, we're going to batter these. Like, we've been unbelievable in training. We've been, you know, just, we all felt on top of the world. And then I think we drew and we kept the...
0-0, was it?
Yeah, it was like a ball draw, but we kind of bossed the game without, you know, we kept the ball all day and it felt great, but we obviously didn't win. And then we kind of went on losing to Newcastle. Then I think it was West Brom. And it just didn't, we didn't get that win that I think would have probably kick-started it.
Yeah.
And I think that was massive, probably looking back at it, because it kind of gave you, even though we believed in it, it probably gave the fans the belief that it was working. You know, that big boost that 3 points does for you at the start of the season that makes you think, cool, here we go. And that's what I do think that we missed. And it would have been interesting to see what happened if Brendan stayed. But, you know, sadly, it didn't work out. He obviously moved on to Swansea, which obviously then goes on to worse things.
I mean, you say, you know, the players were really enjoying the sort of training stuff. Yeah. Do you think you still had the support of the dressing room, or were there sort of enough voices in there to think, actually, maybe a change, we need a change?
I think it was tough because obviously Brendan was academy manager and he was loved about the place, but we'd not done what we wanted to the season before. And I think Nigel Atkins had the same thing, that if you don't start great, you know, it's very quick in football. And I think opinions start to change and, you know, it just didn't work. But did he lose people in the change room? I'm not sure. Like I say, if you're not winning games, doubt creeps in everywhere, doesn't it? And the first one that gets looked at is the manager rather than us ourselves. So it would have been interesting to see what happened with Brendan, but it was it's never nice to see a manager go. And sadly, he did. But it was quite an odd kind of happening when Brendan come in, because just as Brendan came in, Reading had accepted a bid for me from Besiktas.
Really?
Yeah. So I was looking forward to Brendan coming in, because obviously he'd kind of seen me play before I'd signed. So I was thinking, oh, maybe this is good for me. He'll give me a go. And it literally came in and Hamo pulled me in and said that Besiktas had made a bid and I was free to go. And I was completely shocked.
Wow.
Where's this come from? I want to stay here. And I was like, well, if I don't go, can I stay, kind of thing? Because it was like the first, the first experience of not being wanted and being wanted by someone else. It was crazy. And I remember my agent, we went away to Sweden, it was. And while we're still learning all of, like, you know, Brett, that's what it is, pre-season, we were learning Brendan's way. And to me thinking I wasn't wanted, you know, when I was really looking forward to kind of becoming a Reading player, was, you know, was gutting. And then we had a pre-season friendly just before we left, and Brendan played the lads that hadn't played as much, and I played right back, and, you know, I just give it everything I'd got as like a big FU kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, this is what you're missing out on.
Yeah, like one of them. And then the next week I got told that I was staying, and where did I want to play? So it was a proper weird start of the season for myself. And obviously Brendan brought in Frank Lampard Senior, who was a character, and Dean Austin, who I got really well with Dean. And it was just a shame, you know, like I say, it's never nice to see someone go, and everyone wants to play total football, and everyone would be lying to you if they didn't want to play that kind of way. So we were all looking forward to it, and it kind of just fizzled out, sadly.
So how close were you to that move? I mean, did you sort of said, okay, I'll go? Did you actually talk to them, or was it just sort of left hanging?
Yeah, my agent was in talks with them. Look, as far as I know, the bid had accepted. They'd offered me a contract, and I was sitting there thinking, well, let's get some more.
No, yeah, as you do.
Yeah, obviously, that's what you want. And I was thinking, well, if I am going to be moving country at 18 or 19, was I 19? Yeah. You know, it was a whirlwind. And, you know, I've done it now when I was, 26, 25 when I moved. And it's been the hardest thing in the world now, let alone what I could imagine it had been when I was 19. So I'm happy it didn't work out. And I got told, once the Reading obviously told me that they wanted me to stay, I turned around straight away and was like, well, of course I'm not going. I'm staying here. So
I was going to say, well, you buckled down and Brian McDermott came in. I mean, again, we talked about your sort of relationship with Amy. I mean, what was your relationship with Brian like? Because presumably you'd worked under him. What was it like when he came into the dressing room?
Yeah, I was very happy when Brian got the job, because obviously when we were scholars, Brian gave me my first start for the Resies. And obviously when you're a first year scholar, you're like, you can't even dream of that for another year. And he threw me in against, it was Millwall at home. I remember playing that, and that was another tick off the list. And Brian gave me that opportunity. So I was, you know, really excited for Brian to come in and work with him. And well, we were on fire when Brian came in. He knew the club, everyone loved Brian, and he was just the perfect man at the perfect time. And, you know, we shot up the table and finished the season strong. We had that good FA Cup run, I think, as well. So he kind of just, it gave the club a massive boost, which was needed since the relegation.
Yeah, he just sort of came in and the whole sort of atmosphere changed. Like you said, you went on that fantastic ride. If the season had gone on another 10 games, I think you would have made it into the playoffs.
As a whole, Brian coming in and turning the way it started, it was like, right, here we go. We've got something good on our hands here. And on we went.
Yeah, and then you start the following season, you lose Gylfi. Early on, he joins Hoffenheim, and there's sort of a bit of a lull, and you start to think, is it all going to go wrong? But Brian, to his credit, gets in people like your Ian Harts, just brings in little players, and you go on again, and you just go again, and Longhi suddenly burst. I remember, start of that season, Shane was getting quite a bit of stick from Reading fans, because he wasn't finding the net, and suddenly the second half of the season, he can't stop scoring. He only got 20-odd in 6 months.
Yeah, it was... that was... unbelievable season. Everyone was just on fire, and like you say, Shane was getting us through games and, you know, digging us out of it, and in Huntie as well, he was on fire, and it was just a great, you know, a great bunch of lads. It was great to be a part of, and it's still, when I look back, you know, it's one of the best groups I've been a part of, and it was just that winning feeling. And in the Championship, as you see, you win games in a run, and before you know it, you're right in the mix of it. So it sums up, you know, the Championship, and like you say, it's probably the start of Shane and how he's then gone on, and since that little spurt, and, you know, obviously he's doing great now at Southampton.
Yeah, you get all the way, you get to another FA Cup quarter final, put in, you know, play your heart out at City, can't quite get there, and then you get to Wembley again, that playoff semi-final, that 3-0 win at Cardiff again, one of those nights I don't think any Reading fan will forget. Especially after because the first leg I think was a 0-0, it was quite cagey. Then again, you just go there and I think it's Stephen Bywater. Longhi goes up for that ball when it goes in. I mean, what was your game plan going into that? Were you sort of thinking, oh, we'll try and keep this tight and nick it, or did Brian sort of tell you, let's go out and try and actually win this?
Well, when we played Cardiff, I always remember it being quite a hasty affair when we played them, and it was remember Ledge always had a little. I think Ledge had a little bit of trouble with them in one of the games, and we didn't like each other. We didn't like their players. They didn't like us. So when we had them at home, it was like, right, we've got to get a result here, because going to the Cardiff grounds, horrible. Like, it's, you know, it's never good going there. We've never really been doing great. So even before when I was at, we played at Ninian Park and it was horrible, and it was just not a nice place to go. So it was like, if we get a result at home, we'll go away and, you know, we'll grind out and we'll get through. And then when we drew at home, we were a bit gutted, really. But we knew that we could perform on the day and pick something out. And like you said, Shane had gone and got that goal and just give everyone a massive boost. And it was one of them days where you just know that you're going to win it from that start. And from the way we started, we knew it was going to happen. And it was, one of the best wins I think I've been a part of. And just brilliant. And to know that Wembley was coming up, it was like something that we'd never expected. You just think you're going to be in the championship. You try not to think of it too much because we didn't really expect much of ourselves. And then before you know it, it's our next game at Wembley. So it was unbelievable, that game, yeah.
And then, unfortunately, we all know what happened at Wembley. I mean, what happened? Because it just sort of seemed that you just got blitzed by Swansea's Scott Sinclair. I think it was just people just seem to be having uncharacteristically bad games, at least from my position in the seats. I mean, again, you're on the pitch. What were you seeing? How did you suddenly find yourselves 3-0 down?
Well, obviously Swansea had a great season and were unfortunate not to go up straight away. So we were thinking, right, they're going to be a bit, you know, that team that always just misses out. There's going to be a bit. And I thought, we were like, right, we can do this. We were going into that thinking, right, they're going to keep the ball all day long, but we're going to counter, we're going to get a goal, and we'll grind it out like we had done. And we started well. I know we started well. And I think Shane had a chance.
He did.
Had a chance early on. And we were like, wow, Shane's missed. Like, that's not been happening. They'd gone down the other end. And like you say, our defence had an absolute nightmare that day. Everything that was, you know, going through or down the sides. Was it Kish?
Kish? He had a mare.
And Kish, Griff, who'd been an unbelievable season, and Millsy, just that one game, it was gutting, do you know what I mean? To go in at 3-0, we were like, was it 3-0? Yeah, 3-0.
3-0 at half time, yeah.
We were like, what is going on here? And we walked in like what is, do you know, like gobsmacked, as I'm sure, like, it doesn't happen, does it, in like finals?
Even was it Tabby and Nigel Gibbs got themselves sent off as well at half time?
Seeing that, we're like, Tabby's been sent off. Well, Tabby's the nicest guy in the world. What's he going off at? And I think Eamon was there as well. It was just all kicking off. We were like, this is our worst nightmare. And we'd come in at 3-0 and Joby was, you know, brilliant as he was always, you know, getting into us. And Brian gave up one of his best speeches ever. He was just calm. He wasn't fuming at us. He was like, kind of forget everything, what's gone on. Just try and, not that we could, but just try and forget everything. Think of where you are, and you've got 45 minutes now to go out and just change everything. Just go out, get an early goal, and just see what happens. He was probably thinking inside, like, we ain't got a chance here. It was, you know, we went out, I think, was it Millsy? Was it Millsy?
Yeah, Millsy gets, yeah, no, Millsy got, it was the first one was the own goal. Well, Noel/an own goal.
Yeah, own goal, definitely. Yeah. Noel always has to claim them.
yeah. He claimed the ghost goal, didn't he?
Yes. Well, I think, was he on the pitch? I don't know, I think I tried to claim that at one point. But, yeah, and then we got the second one, And we were like, right, it's meant to be. This whole season, everything that's happened, this is it. It's going to happen. And the ball dropped, obviously, in the edge of the air, and I've hit it. And Gary Monk's got a touch, was it?
Yeah. Hit the puck. How many times have you replayed that and it's gone the other way?
Well, every time I go to Wembley now, I look at that goal and I'm like, oh, you. Like, just look at it and I'm thinking, come on. Like, just replay it all the time, every time there's game at Wembley. And then No, who was it? Someone made a last-ditch tackle. Was it Monk again, just to block it on the goal? And it was like that took a lot out of us. It was, I don't know if we created a chance after that, but especially with it being Brendan as their manager, it was like, for the lads that kind of weren't involved as much as they were, it was like a big kind of like, come on, boys, like, let's show them.
And did he have any words with you after the game?
No, I didn't see him after the game. They were too busy celebrating. I don't know who did. I think maybe he spoke to Shane. I'm not too sure. But no, it was. We went into the change room after. We were absolutely gutted, as you can imagine. But, you know, at the same time, we knew we'd give it absolutely everything. But, you know, like I say, the worst feeling ever.
I was going to say, from a fan's point of view, though, I've sat and watched three of these playoff final defeats now. And that 20-minute spell when you got those two goals and you hit the post, it's probably some of the most enjoyable minutes of any of the three of them, and we've led in the other two. That hope, and I, you must have felt it from the pitch, the reaction when that second goal went in. Again, I don't think I've been in a Reading crowd like it. It's electric.
Yeah, the feeling, like, don't get me wrong, when you play any match, it's, you know, you've got your adrenaline going, you're buzzing, but when it's at Wembley and you saw, we were shooting obviously into the Reading fans as well, weren't we, when we got the goal. you know, just seeing it all erupt, because you kind of, it's weird, you kind of blank out the crowd when you're playing, like, you can imagine there not being anything around the pitch, but as soon as, like, the goal went in, you just see everyone go mental, and you're just like, wow, like, that influence that it gave us, it was like, right, we're going to do it, and just seeing everyone go crazy, and then the second one, and it was like, it's going to happen, and we were, like, possessed after that second goal, and I remember running around on the pitch thinking I was like Ronaldinho trying everything. It just felt, I felt like a different person, and going into it. And obviously once you hit that post, it's like, oh, it kind of,
the air gets sucked out.
If it was meant to be, it was meant to be kind of thing. It kind of just killed us a bit going into that, you know, that, it was a bit of a lull the last few. And then I think obviously, was it Barini? Was it, did he go and get a goal at the
Griff
end?
Griff gave away, I think, another penalty. To Scott, and Scott Sinclair put it in.
Okay, yeah, and then that was a good night, wasn't it? So yeah. It was a horrible day, but it was the end of that kind of, we're like, oh, gutted. But, you know, once we all regrouped and we went back after that game and we let our hair down and we all got together and was like, what a great season. And it took us into like the unforgettable year the next season.
You lost Long, you lost Matt Mills as well in that summer, but you found a way again to get you going. Signed the likes of Alfie, Caspers at the back. But the key difference, I think, again, from a fan's point of view, was I think you were doing all right for most of the season. You were sort of hanging around the playoffs. Yeah. Then we had the whole takeover in January. Anton came in and gave Brian the money. To go out, exactly. Yeah. What difference did he make from a player's point of view to that side? Was he, as far as you were concerned as players, was he that X factor?
100% he was, because, you know, Jason, I spoke to him today, funny enough, he's all over the screens at the moment, isn't he? Focus. I can't get enough of him at the moment. But yeah, he was that Premier League player, and we hadn't obviously been in the Prem for a few seasons, and we'd all seen what he'd done in his career, and he wasn't playing at Blackburn, but he was that kind of, he was 100% someone that we thought if we could get in and score in, teams couldn't deal with him. And I think he showed that the first game was Bristol City, wasn't it? I think was it 1-0 we won?
I think it was a dodgy rebound.
Yeah, it was terrible, yeah.
It's David James.
Yeah, he bubbled it in, and it was like, it was just like, you know, when you just know someone's going to score. He had that effect straight away. And he even at training, he'd kind of do stuff, and you're like, right, that's the next kind of quality that we need. And yeah, he brought it in the door. And Brian said, we can get him in, we'll be firing. And the same with when he brought Caspers in, he had so much confidence in Casper, who'd obviously won the league with QPR the season before. He said to all of us, I remember sitting down and going, this guy's a born winner. And he will help us get to where we want to be. And he was another one, I think, kind of an unsung hero in all that as well.
Are you saying that Bongani Kamalo didn't inspire that confidence in the team?
Bongani, he was a lovely. I don't know where he is now, but he didn't inspire much confidence. So, no, he didn't get much of a chance, did he? Bless him. But
no.
He was one that we brought in from Spurs. We were like, right, we got another
South African captain, I think he was.
Yeah, and we were like, right, here we go. And I remember, I think it was Morrow said to me, he went, I'm not too sure about this one. and I went, all right, well, let's give it a go. And obviously it didn't work out. But,
yeah,
you know, you win some, you lose some.
Indeed. And you go on. And you go on that absolutely, again, it's an incredible run that those Brian McDermott teams just seem to have in the second half of the season. You just won game after game after game. What point did you actually sit here and think, you know what? Because West Ham and Southampton have been at the top two all season. What point did you go, we can actually catch these guys?
I think it was more of a joke when we were kind of on that run. We were like, cool, if we keep going, we might get in the playoffs. We might, you know, who knows, we might get in the playoffs again and have another Wembley go. And we were all thinking, right, if we can get in there, we're going to rectify what just happened. And, you know, we're going to win at Wembley. That would be the best feeling ever. And as we kept going, we couldn't believe it. I don't know how many we won in a row. I don't know, was it 12 or whatever it was? And we were looking at the other results, and we started seeing that they were dropping a few points. They were like, you know, you could see that people started talking about us, and it was like, oh, I wonder what could happen. And they just started getting a few shaky results, and before you knew it, we were turning up at West Ham knowing that if we'd won, we were going into them, was it into the automatic spots, I think it was at the time. And yeah, it was unbelievable. I can't describe how it was when we were there. We were coming into training, everyone loved each other, we were best mates, we loved Gaffer, the Gaffer was one of us, Gibbo, everyone was one, and it was that feeling that you're going to kill yourself on your pitch for your mate next to you, and I'd do anything for Ledge. If he was out of place, I would run my nuts off to get him for him, and everyone on that pitch was together, and we knew we were just thinking of the impossible, really, and you know, it was crazy. It was an unbelievable run, and best thing I've ever been a part of.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned that West Ham game, the 4-2 win. Again, I talked about the bounce at Wembley, the bounce in that away end. Well, yeah. I think Noel put us ahead. I think because Casper's got the equaliser, and Noel put us ahead again. Yeah. Just fantastic stuff. And it's the next game that must be really bittersweet for you. That Leeds game. A club I'm sure holds nothing but fond memories for you. Leeds. You go in. Is it Michael Brown? Wasn't it? That was a Neil Warnock side, wasn't it? And they were horrible in that game.
I don't know what it was. I'm in that West Ham game. I'd broke my nose, so I'd gone in for a tackle with Danny Collins, and I've gone in for a slide tackle, and I've come out with a broken nose. He kneed me in my face, so I missed probably one of the best 10 minutes of, you know, the boys getting the goals after that there ever was, because I was getting my nose cracked in by the doctor. I had to come on. And, you know, I was on the pitch trying to get it cracked then and there, but I was like, oh, I'll be all right. And I couldn't see a thing, so I had to come off. So I missed that last 10 minutes. Then we're going into that Leeds game. I remember having my black eye, and Danny Pugh absolutely smashed me early on in the game when the Leeds fans were calling it Sockgate, funnily enough. And then it kicked. I think someone got sent off, didn't they, in the corner?
Thompson, I think. Yeah, for not even not the worst tackle of the day. It was a bad one, but it wasn't horrific. Yeah, 12 minutes in.
Yeah, I think Joby kind of jumped up in the air like he does. And then I remember I'd rushed in, like trying to, you know, because it was a bit like, whoa, calm down. Like, you've already done me. Like, you know, what is going on here? And like I said, it was a feisty lead side who wanted to put a halt on things. And we knew how much it meant. And then after that, I've obviously gone to clear the ball, and then he's just come in and just completely swiped me out. And it ruined the end of my season. It was, you know, unbelievable seeing all the boys, but I wasn't there to kind of, you know, I wasn't the pitch at Brighton, then Southampton. You know, I'd been involved that whole season, and to miss out, you know, in them last few games, it was like, oh, what have I done to deserve this kind of thing? So, no, it was tough.
Apologise for it?
Nah, of course he didn't. Never got a thing up him. But when we played Leeds at home that season, he'd done me in that game, and I had to come off. So I don't know what I'd done to him, to be honest. But yeah, it killed me, that did, you know, coming off in that game. I only thought I'd sprained it, really, because it was painful, but it weren't excruciating pain, which I've obviously suffered after. But I'd gone into I'd gone in after, and then obviously I found out we'd scored. Was it Alfie? Did Alfie get a goal?
Two in the last sort of 5 minutes, I think, my memory serves.
And I was absolutely buzzing. So I was like, yes, like, I'll be back for the next game. This is nothing. I'll be sweet. Because I'd sprained an ankle, rolled an ankle before, and it had always been fine. It kind of felt similar. And after the game, Bobby Wilkerson, like a great mate of mine, the Hungford gaff, he drove me to the hospital. And you know, sitting in there having great banter with him, like, cool, we're going to go up, like, all this, like, crack. And then the doctor came and he went, look, Jim, I've got some bad news, and you broke your ankle. And I went, eh? Like, you're having me on. And I went, Bobby, have you told him to tell him this? And I just burst out into tears, like, because I was like, this is going to be the best season ever for Reading. Like, we're going to go up, like, you killed, like, no, this can't be happening kind of thing. And I went, show me the scan. So I still didn't, show me x-ray. I still didn't believe him. He came in and I had a, you know, a fracture down my ankle, and it just broke me. It absolutely broke me. And then obviously I went in for surgery, you know, a couple of weeks later. But I missed, yeah.
I was going to say, though, I've got memories now of you coming to the celebrations after we promoted. Hadn't you just gone under the knife and you were still a bit doped up and you got sort of wheeled into the dressing room?
Yeah, I still to this day, I love Luke Anthony to bits, and he's, you know, an unbelievable physio, but he absolutely killed me booking my surgery for that day. I even said to him, I went, oh, we've got a game. Like, not I was going to play, obviously. He was like, yeah, but you'll be in early in the morning, and if you feel all right, like patronising me, and I don't even think he thought we were going to, you know, win that game. He was like, come on, Forest, like, we won't win it, or we won't get what we need, kind of thing.
Yeah, because West Ham were playing, I think, Bristol City, and I think if they had won or something, we would have had to wait. So I don't think many people were actually expecting it that night.
Yeah, he was like, oh, don't worry about it, and I think Forest were doing all right. They had some good players. I think G-Mac was there, wasn't he, at the time?
Guns as well.
Yeah, and he just dimmed it down a bit to me. So I was like, all right, we'll go for it. But before that, we'd had the Brighton away game with Hart, he'd scored. And I've been at that, fortunately, with Ledge, because Ledge missed it as well. And we'd hung on for dear life and that got the goal. Then we went to Southampton, which was
amazing. Incredible.
Yeah, like that was one of the best viewings of my life. We nearly got kicked out. I think me and Ledge were having a fight with one of the Southampton fans behind us. We were like on the brink there. The steward had sent us to calm down. So that was unbelievable. Like the most exhilarating, you know, feeling ever watching that game. Because their team was unbelievable when you look at it.
Yeah. Lallana, Ricky Lambert.
Yeah, Fonte. Never ending. Like that team was, we thought were guaranteed. Was it Nigel as well?
We were like,
guaranteed they're going to be like, well, I thought guaranteed they're going to win this. We shouldn't have said that, but yeah. And it was, then obviously, yeah, going into that game and Luke had booked it in. And in my heart of hearts, I knew what was going to happen, but it was like, I couldn't really push it too much. And I think the surgeon who kind of was like doing it early as a favor. So I couldn't really turn around and go, no, I ain't having it kind of thing. I should have done really. But I was booked in for early morning and I didn't have my operation until about 3 PM.
Wow.
So I knew as it was dragging, they dosed me up before it. I don't know whether it was to calm me down because I was getting the shakes over the game and things. But I don't remember much of it before, just that surgery was delayed. And then I went down, come out of surgery, was obviously out of it. And then I woke up to the game. Like my mum was there, as she always is, with the radio next to my bed. And I was like, what's going on? And I was like, oh, we're drawing. And I think I've like snoozed back off. Then I woke back up again and it was Ledge scoring.
Nice.
And I'll never forget that because I think my brother was there and he flipped something. I think my sister was screaming in my face and I was like, what's going on? Like, that wouldn't be something that my family and I will always have kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? It was just knowing that I wasn't there killed me, but being with my family at that moment, thinking we're getting promoted and I'm with my family, it was like a different experience. And I think I dozed off again after that. And then my mum woke me up like, game's finished. What do you want to do? And I was like, well, get me out of here. And she was like, well, we can't really, can we? And then I screamed at her, like, get me the F out of here now. And we nicked a wheelchair because it was obviously in the evening now. Yeah. It could be 9, nearly 10 because we were always 8 o'clock kickoff, annoyingly. And like wheeled me down, threw me in the car, and I just remember screaming at my mum, going, "Go faster, go faster!" missing it, and I could hear, like, I think it was Tim on the radio saying, "And the boys are going up to get their trophy," and it was killing me. And then, like, it still does. Like, getting worked up here, it was. The worst but the best feeling ever, throwing up morphine. I remember giving me a plastic bag, which funnily enough, had a hole in it. So I
lovely.
Throw up in the passenger seat, and then we turned up to Reading Stadium, and it was going crazy, and I think I told a few fans to do one, because I was obviously out of it.
Sure, they understood.
There. Yeah, and I was like, get them away, and they pushed me through. Managed to get me downstairs and then kind of come out the little lift there, and I'd seen Gibbo and Noel in his pants, and you know, it was still is to this day, I'd say, one of the worst feelings in the world, never being able to go up and hold that trophy in front of the fans after playing so many games. But it was just great to be there. Do you know what I mean? It was it just made it a lot better seeing, you know, my best pals in football, who still are, and Gibbo gave me a big hug. It was, like I said, you'd seen the video then. I was crying then. I was a wreck. But no, it was the best moment I've had in football by a mile, even though I was on crutches with a broken ankle. And even the celebrations going off, obviously, on our little holiday afterwards together, it was interesting, only having one leg, but it was an unforgettable experience, and I'll always have that.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
So that wraps up part one. Thank you again to Jem for giving us his time, and thank you to you for taking the time to download and listen to the show. Coming up in part two, as mentioned at the top of the show, we've got lots more on a more tricky time in Jem's career, struggling with big injuries and the decisions that ultimately led him to leave Reading Football Club, what he's doing now and what he might be doing in the future. So very much encourage you to stick around for that one. That will be getting released in around about a week or so, maybe New Year's Eve, maybe New Year's Day. Depends on basically a few things of what I'm doing and how much time I get away from the family. So that remains to be seen. But in the meantime, again, thank you very much for downloading. Thank you for supporting us via patreon.com/thetarlhurstend. And we'll speak to you soon.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.